thanks again for being here tonight, and thank you very much for your kind emails and some questions. And just a shout-out to our friends in Canada. The Canadians have always been our very, very good friends, always steady, always willing to help us, and they're a steady and mellow people. When there's controversy in the world, you don't normally say, oh, those Canadians are starting trouble again. It's like you never hear that. So, hey, I'm with you. I think Ben Affleck, good director, good little actor. He's all right. But I think he should have given Canada a tip of the hat. He just made a bunch of dollars. And some people question the accuracy of the film. But be that as it may, Canada, we love you. And you know that. And if you didn't, you know it now. All right, we'll be right back with Brad Barker. We'll talk about the shapes of things to come regarding your preparedness on Coast to Coast AM. Brad Barker, host of the Discovery Channel's Kidnap and Rescue Program, is our guest tonight. Say, you know, you were talking about the three C's a while ago. I think they were communicate, coordinate, and collaborate. Is that it?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, I aired my 5 G's some time ago, which since the insurance company still refers to acts of God, he has to be on the list. So my list is, my 5 G's are God, grub, gear, guns, and some guts. And I'm thinking that may be a little Neanderthal for some, but too bad. That's my doctrine, and I'm sticking with it.
Neanderthal is good. Give me those again.
That would be God, grub, gear, guns, and some guts.
I'm all over that. I'm going to use that and credit you, John. That's beautiful.
May you be blessed. Now, let me ask you something.
Yes,
before
sir.
You get a chance to recap this thing, because this is such a valuable program, and your appearance on it, and the emails are a testament to it.
Thank you.
If you don't want to go out on the clothesline on this, it's okay, because I have a reputation of asking some questions that probably shouldn't be asked necessarily, but I'm going to try it anyway. And if you say I'm not going there, then we'll go on instantly. I won't challenge you on it.
You're driving.
Well, why is it that we heard all of these reports that people who seemed visibly prepared, or at least their preparedness was implied because maybe they lived in a big house or in what was a pretty nice neighborhood before the Hurricane Katrina hit? I understand the law enforcement folks were keen on picking up firearms from people who probably would have felt better if they had been allowed to keep them. Is this normal, or was that just an isolated situation based on your experience?
It's not isolated. I keep using the analogy that we've seen this movie before. And, you know, the classic 80-20 rule, 80% of the time, you see the same thing over and over again, and then you have this 20% delta, which are the variables that are, germane to that region or that culture or that society. With regard to the weapons, when non-governmental organizations, host nation assets, volunteers, the faith-based community all jump into the dog pile under the guise of saving lives, which is truly what they're doing. Those three C's of communication, coordination, and collaboration all fall apart every single time. Every single time, there hasn't been an event that we've responded to globally where those three elements were not even were so absent. It's like they never existed. So now you've got a whole bunch of folks that are operating in an area, and they don't know who has lethal force around them. And that makes everybody very, very nervous.
Gotcha.
And it makes the first responder reluctant to respond. I'll give you an example that happened to us personally. You take water away from people, and they're going to spiral through various states of emotion and consciousness all the way to dementia and then death. So first responder helicopter assets at night were trying to rescue families off of the roofs of their house so they would not be consumed by Lake Pontchartrain. So as the spotlight is coming down from the sky to rescue your loved ones, why would you grab your shotgun and shoot the helicopter?
Because you're going nuts.
Because you're going nuts. So not only does that speak to your why are we trying to control the firearms in a chaotic situation, but man, you better have water. And the ironic thing, you know, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. I mean, these guys are at risk of drowning, but they don't have any potable, clean water to save their lives. And then you take that exact same thing, and this is in the United States in 2005, you know, where we believe, you know, we've got everything. Now, in Haiti, same kind of thing. The people who live in Haiti are so used to the types, you know, they're used to what we would consider toxic water. And, you know, you and I couldn't have a glass of water down there. We'd be reading the newspaper in the men's room for, you know, days.
A week.
But yeah. They're truly resilient down there because they've adapted to that. To that region, but the same type of thing happens. You know, when you take away any type of potable water, what you get is cholera, because you can't wash, you can't hydrate, you can't let your body fight off a bunch of disease that has been introduced to them by the relief workers. And that is an unpopular piece of data. That, you know, cholera hasn't existed on the island of Española for years. It was the relief workers and the responders that came in that introduced cholera. And it's just a sin what happened. So, you know, again, the common thread here, and I don't mean to belabor this point, but water is so ridiculously precious, and it goes away so fast. And you don't have a whole lot of time as a human without it.
Yeah, you can go a few days without food, but you're going to get short on water in what, 48 hours max?
You know, I'll give it, you know, a resilient person is going to start to, you know, of course you're going to get emotional, but you will be losing it in 48 to 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean losing it, you know, cognitively. And then though your behavior may kill you. Or you may just die of dehydration. So the preparedness element, you know, is really critical, and it's so easy. It's so easy.
Tell us about these channels and access points for some free information for people who fear that I don't have time to take off work and go do a preparedness course. Are you kidding me? I know what
no.
to do.
Well, the first one, of course, I'm gonna mention is our own, and it's a magazine that's, you know, 40-50 pages. It comes out every month. It's called The Harbinger, and a harbinger is a sign of things to come. And that's really what we're talking about here, is how do we try to understand what's next? And so what the Harbinger does is it talks about various ways that you can understand the problem, because you cannot develop a solution for you or your family for something that you know little or nothing about. So we have an obligation to engage and learn from those that know a thing or two about these issues and see what the best practice is out there. You don't need to be fast roping out of a Black Hawk helicopter. You just need to know a couple of things that will keep you around. What we're trying to do is just buy time. We do this from the preparedness standpoint of prepare your family and your house so that you can shelter there until real help arrives. We've been doing a whole lot for school districts around the country because of, you know, recent incidents in Connecticut. Obviously, there's a lot there, and that was just a tragic event. And what we're doing is we're teaching school districts how to fortify their classrooms by just putting some reinforcement on the doors just to buy them time. We're not trying to turn a classroom into a safe room or a panic room. We're just trying to buy some time so that the first responders can come by and do their job. Same kind of thing. And these resources are out there, and we would recommend that people go to the Harbinger to look at that. The other two that I mentioned is Sam Sheridan. He's a guy who wrote the Disaster Diaries, which is a great resource. And then there's Jack Spirko, who's a guy that would be a great guest for you folks, and he's got the Survivors podcast. Now, I just want to be clear that these types of things are not the crazy, you know, prepper communities where it's just a little over the top. This is actual practical application of real stuff that you as a regular Joe can apply today. And, you know, I just want to underscore that there's the preparedness thing and the prepper thing you know, there's that has become a bit of a cottage industry. It's had a fair amount of media attention. There's some shows sure. about it, but there's some, there are grains of truth. There's nuggets in there that are real, and what it is giving you the information so you can protect your family and your community can support itself. If we get there, then folks like Halo don't have to come by. You really don't want to meet us. Because because you have to. Much rather hang out with you at a happy hour or in a Starbucks than if we're actually in a deployable operation.
Sure, and I did not realize when you spoke of the Harbinger, this is a free publication, yes?
Oh yeah. We don't charge to keep people alive. We want to resource everybody.
Okay, well, guess what? I just subscribed to it.
Why? Thank you. Yes. We'd love for you guys to post it on the Coast to Coast website. We think there's important stuff in there. It's a free magazine. We do it ourselves. Believe it or not, in the security industry, there's one or two A-type personalities. There's one or two opinions out there.
Sure.
So what we try to do is emulsify a lot of that expertise and reduce it to stuff that people can apply. We don't want to keep it too heady or too over the top, or people are going to delete.
Gotcha. Now, go ahead. Yeah, I think you had another thought. I wanted to.
The Survival Podcast. You can just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com. Jack Spierko is the host there. Again, this is a guy I don't know. He's just a guy I listen to. Because the moment you think you know everything is the day you stop learning, and that's the day you just increased your own vulnerability. So we're always listening to what other people in this space are doing, because we are both teachers and students, and that's a real healthy place for us.
How are we spelling his last name? S-P-I-R-C-O?
S-P-I-R-K-O, Jack Spierko, and that's thesurvivalpodcast.com.
All right, very good. Well, thanks for that. Now, so before we leave the Katrina and Haiti thing for
sure.
Just how bad was it? Can you paint a picture? Because we're talking about, for anybody who wasn't there,
right,
it's like, that was a long time ago, and so what? It didn't touch me. But, if people will pay attention, and they are paying attention, that's why they're listening tonight, some of them are anyway, something's headed our way. We don't know what it is. Is it going to be a nuclear disaster or near disaster on our own turf, like what's been experienced in Japan? Is it going to be a weather-related incident? Everybody was freaking out about the meteor and don't really believe NASA would tell us, it's going to hit us. Probably not. I'm not sure if I was the head of NASA, I don't think I'd tell the Earthlings that an asteroid the size of New York City was going to hit us. So all this information is flying around all over the place. Can you just give us a brief picture of, not necessarily the worst thing that you ever saw, but just a description of the average level of misery and how long it lasted?
Well, let me get up to 30,000 feet real fast. There's this time continuum. If you could draw a timeline in your mind's eye, right there, bifurcating your timeline is the bang, B-A-N-G. That's the incident, whatever that incident is. Insert your threat here, whether it's, the meteor, a seismic event, a meteorological event, a Fukushima-like event, or the zombie apocalypse. You know, whatever it is, whatever your worst day is, John, just it's right there in the middle. Okay. In the United States, I would love to say that we are among the best, if not the best, in the world at response. We are so darn good, because we've got it down to a system at the local level, at the state level, at the federal level. We know what we are doing. We're the best in the world at evacuating the wounded and cleaning up the mess. We're better than any country out there, except for Katrina. That is just, will always be the one that everybody thinks that's our status quo.
Well, and FEMA didn't get any gold stars for that deal up there in New York.
Exactly. No. It's true, but Katrina was a unique incident, because you had a whole lot of French colonial law that exists down there. That French colonial law doesn't even exist in France now, but we still got it. And you had a whole lot of parish presidents that were either gone or scared or dead, and they can't release control to the mayor. The mayor can't release control to the governor. The governor can't release control to the president, and everybody was scared to make a decision for fear of liability. I mean, we politically corrected ourselves into doom and death.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
We all watched it on high definition television, and it changed my life and the life of several folks that make a living doing this kind of work, because we finally said, there's a gap here. Nobody's filling it. This is the United States. Is this the best we got? And then when I heard that we do more sustainability operations and humanitarian aid for citizens of other countries than we do for our own, I just scratched my head and said, you know what, let's put this HALO thing together. Let's make it real. And we've been doing it around the world ever since. And we've seen some things that on a massive scale that would break your heart, but we also do a whole lot of things that are very personal, like this human trafficking thing and this hostage terrorism and rescuing kidnapped victims from you know, sexual slavery or exploitation or ransom or extortion, repatriating them back into the United States and introducing them back to their families. And the stories and the situations that they're in, I'm sure you can paint a picture of what was happening to these people while they were in captivity. And you know, an organization like ours should really not exist. But the fact of the matter is, there's 2.5 million victims of kidnapping, human trafficking in the United States annually. You know, you've got 80% of those go into sexual slavery. 17% of those are forced into labor. And the ratio of male to female is 2 out of every 3 are female. And it's a $32 billion a year industry. Okay, these are all statistics from the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Okay, this is not our data. So if you got $32 billion and it's a transnational epidemic, think about what kind of resistance the folks that are making this $32 billion are going to put towards keeping these revenues flowing.
So when you're talking about human trafficking, you're talking about kids for the purposes of everything from illegal adoption to prostitution, pornography, and just every damn thing.
And everything in between. So if you, it's a transnational syndicate that is like any large multinational corporation, and it is the logistics and supply chain of the commodities of trafficking in humans. So if you look at your produce at your grocery store, and you know that that's harvested from some tree somewhere that's not in your neighborhood, some tropical land, and it's put on a boat, and then it's shipped to your country, and then it's distributed from your country to your state, and from your state to your community, and then from your community onto the shelf of your grocery store so you can grab that orange and put it in your shopping cart and go buy it. Okay, the same type of thing is happening to money laundering, drug trafficking, weapons trafficking, and human trafficking. This is not a new thing. It's just that this is coming to bear right now because we are living in the information age, and we have instantaneous access to accurate and true data in the palm of our hand. And now it's heartbreaking, and people are starting to do some things about it. And it is the second largest crime in the world, and it's the fastest growing, second only to drug trafficking.
You know, Brett, I just have to toss this out here. If you can't get a joint through the airport, how do you get a metric ton of heroin through the airport? So I'm wondering, how can this operation continue to go on at the level that it goes on without political protection?
Well, this is very unpopular dialogue that you and I are having right now. And
I love it.
People don't want to talk about this thing. Their head is in the sand or elsewhere where the sun doesn't shine. And until we remove the anal cranial inversion and the political correctness and the fear of liability and being sued for saying something that's going to offend some minority somewhere or someone who believes in something, and those people fight in courts and tie everybody up so that the responders are scared to death, not of the fire or the assailant or the actual threat. They're fearful of their own laws and their own bureaucracy and their own suspension of rights here domestically in the U.S.
Oh, man. Let's pick it up where we just left off. You know, I'm part of a minority, too. I am a part of the demographic of guitar-playing heterosexual males over the age of 50. As Eastwood said in Line of Fire, there ain't many of us, but we got a powerful lobby. This is Coast to Coast AM. When we come back with Brad Barton, we're going to discuss cybersecurity. You know, from remote, undisclosable location, you can mess with somebody's nuclear reactor. You can turn off their entire grid. You can induce a blackout if you wish. There are some dangers involved in social media, big ones. And a number of other things that you just wouldn't believe are both a threat, which is to your person, and a risk, which is more property-oriented. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us, please. This is Coast to Coast AM. Brad Barker, how does the sex trade function in this country?
Think about how any other trade functions in this country, and it's just like that. You look at any type of commodity, which is something that could be bought, sold, or traded, and an inherent value is assigned to it based on specific attributes. Your car is more expensive because it's got ABS system, it's got a great stereo, and you can put in MP3s of all of your forgotten guitar tracks that you recorded in your studio on Pro Tools in quadraphonic sound. The same thing applies to people. Unfortunately, the more money somebody has, we've seen a direct correlation between a criminal's net worth and their sexual deviancy. So the case is made that the younger the person is, they might cost more money on the sex trade market. Siblings as a pair get a higher profit margin. Twins, blonde hair, blue eyes, people from a specific ethnicity, all cause the commodity to be in greater demand and to cost more. So there are, just on the outro there, you mentioned cybersecurity. There is a thing out there that you may or may not be aware of that's called the dark web or the dark net. And this is the bad guy secret internet behind the internet. And this is a automated logistics and supply chain for anything that you could possibly want. It means that I can get a case of AK-47s delivered to this address in this country for this much money, and it will be there, like FedEx. I can get bazookas, helicopters, drugs. I can have
an orgy of albino pygmies.
It's true. Albino pygmies are, with that same logic, would be quite expensive. But literally, you can go on there and you can see that the average price to have somebody whacked globally is $20,000.
Yes.
So if you go onto one of these Silk Road websites or one of these dark net sites, you can see it's all anonymous. The IP address cannot be trace routed because they're hopping from server to server outside of the U.S. and all these proxies are filtering the IP address so that it can't be traced. And you put money out there in various forms of anonymous money like PayPal or are you at all familiar with Second Life, the video game? It's a virtual reality game out there. It's a game where you can play a role. It's a role-playing game, but you pay money to get these digital credits, and these credits can be passed to other characters, and those other characters and other avatars can pass it around to other people inside the game. And then on the other side of the game, it can be cashed out, and it's a way of digital money laundering. So you can do these transactions in a way with very little risk of being discovered, and we're talking, just like I mentioned earlier, drug trafficking, weapons trafficking, human trafficking, money laundering, and this is all happening in cyber, which means which means it's in the cloud, which means it's mobile. So now the case can be made that cyberspace is not a place that you can point to on a map. It's not a place that has a geographical mass. You don't need a passport to get there. But you do have a flag there. You do have a presence there. You, John, have a presence there because you have a computer. You have a mobile device. So you do have risk, and you do have threat based on our previous definition.
Yes.
And this is not just some hocus-pocus thing. If you look at the youngest division of the Department of Defense, which is referred to as a command, the second youngest command was AFRICOM, which is that region that many people are unaware was stood up. Well, there's been another one, and that was Cyber Command. U.S. Cyber Command is now in full force and being well-funded because right now the United States is getting some target acquisition on preparing for a cyber first strike.
That would be from China or Russia or both.
Or North Korea or Iran. Iran's pissed because of the whole Stuxnet thing.
They're
they've got money and they've got smart people and they're outsourcing a whole lot. And we've got several thousand credible penetration attacks on our intelligence community every day. So you had a little tongue-in-cheek joke there on during the break about NSA giggling. Well, these are the ones who've been mandated by the director of NSA to prepare the United States for a cyber first strike, because if a cyber first strike occurs, you're not going to see an explosion. You're not going to see a meteor in the sky. You're not going to see a mushroom cloud. It's just stuff is not going to work. And so all the different things that we talked about at the very beginning of this interview of water, power, sewer, communications, all that stuff that happened to Katrina and Haiti, it's going to be like the way people described 10 years ago the EMP threat, it's the exact same result, except instead of somebody coming after you with a gun and pointing and shooting, they're just going to point and click, and everything you got is going to be off. And then all those things that I talked about earlier are going to go into play. And where's my water? Where's my people? Where's my stuff? And society is at a risk of cascading because we're not prepared for any of that. None of it. If our grid goes down hard, in my view, we do not have a fail-safe. There is no redundancy plan at the state and local level to keep the communities up and running. So you've got continuity of government that's going to spiral. Obviously, continuity of business is going away, and people are going to have to hunker down. So preparedness, of course, is the key, and this is going to be very stressful. So this hyper-realistic stress inoculation, immersive training of real live threats that are coming soon to a theater near you is what needs to be developed, and it's not being provided to the communities from our government. So private sector organizations are filling that gap.
This is what's killing me about all of this. Look, I have a sketch here of some stuff that we can talk about tonight. I'm just slightly off the grid. It's just an opinion and a comment because I know you're all over the world. So
we're good.
I'm sorry. I just stepped all over you. What'd you say?
No, you and I are both off of our little chart of what we wanted to discuss. But this is awesome. This is what this is for.
Well, the thing about it is, Brad, and by the way, I'm giving you G5 for free, and you do not have to credit me. If you want it, you can have it, because earlier I violated one of my father's number one – well, it's one of my father's number one rules. Yeah, actually, that's very accurate. He had several number one rules. One of them was don't ever screw up anybody's name, and I did a while ago. If you didn't notice it, I did, so – just on the off chance, you may play the program back again and hear that, how I rearranged some of the letters in your last name. It's Barker, not what I said earlier.
It's all right.
I want to give you the phrase.
With Bob Barker for years, and they've been asking me to get them on Price is Right and, spin the wheel and come on down and spay and neuter your pets. So
I said Barton, and it's somebody that I don't even know who he is now. I just know I've heard his name for years. It's a local deal. It's like I just screwed up. So there it is. It's yours. My question is the G5, that is.
Yeah.
Why are we doing all this business with China? Why? Two things. I think it was a really bad idea to start running everything over the internet, number one. Number two, why are we doing all this business with China? Because they're always attacking us. Always these cyber attacks. You know, everything from the "I hate you" from the little pull the string and the dogs or the doll says "I hate you" back several years ago to, you know, buying up all of our debt. I mean, do you have an opinion as to what's going on here behind the scenes that we're just not going to get a straight answer on?
I have this to say. No one invited me to the table where those negotiations took place.
Me either.
You know, it's happened. I mean, that horse is out of the barn.
Right.
One thing that, you know, and I'm paraphrasing smarter people than me who have opinions on this. You know, U.S. needs money. Everyone knows. I mean, this is the sequestration is a national holiday, and unfortunately, a lot of the folks that are friends of mine in federal service are they're concerned about their jobs, and you know, furloughs are happening. Border Patrol right now is very concerned about just, you know, their jobs and their families, not at all about the secondary and tertiary issues with regard to national security. Now China. Thankfully, we don't see eye to eye politically, and they own all of our debt, and we buy all of their products. And our economic dependence on each other, because the United States is the largest consumer by a long shot of everything made in China. So they're not going to really, really hurt us. What I believe they're doing right now is they're peeking and poking, and they are setting their table for something that is going to happen in the future. If we ever get sideways with them economically, they're going to have the keys to the castle.
You mean as in default on our debt?
A host of things. Defaulting on our, I mean, I don't even think that the debt we have to China is quantifiable. And that which cannot be measured cannot be improved. I think that is a virtual piece of fluff. I don't know that you can point to those dollars. They don't reside anywhere. I don't know that you can point to the dollars in the national treasury. But this is another rabbit hole. There's an economic fiscal stalemate that exists that keeps China and the U.S. at bay, and what you have is an immovable object being assaulted by an unstoppable force, and the stalemate is the result in the middle.
Going back to this reality, this role playing game that
Second Life.
You've drawn the parallel with the way the human trafficking works,
sure,
and the money that moves around. Do you think this Bitcoin thing that's going around is going to help that process? Talk about moving money around anonymously.
Well, what you've got, let's look at all crime. Everything that you're mentioning right now between the U.S. and China and the cyber credits and this type of these methods of laundering money and washing the finances around the world, this type of crime is not new. It's been happening since the dawn of time.
Banks,
it's just that
it
we now live in the information age, and now what you're seeing is the manifestation of its cyber equivalent. So if you go look at any type of crime, and we've been talking a little bit about human trafficking for a bit, any type of bad guy is going to look at those three V's, how visible and how valuable and how vulnerable a target is. And the bad guys don't have to leave their chair to identify a target. So the process of target selection is age old. It's bad guy doctrine. It's just now they're using technology because, oh, by the way, the bad guys have the internet too. So they've automated their process of target selection. So now if you look at any predator, predator is a term that typically was assigned to, you know, the animal kingdom. I'm thinking of, wild kingdom. And you see the gazelles cruising across the Serengeti, and the cheetah goes after the one that gets peeled off the pack, off the herd, and they go after that one, and that is what happens not only in society where they go after our weak and our sick and the ones that are peeled off to the side, but they also go after that same vulnerable target in the cyber realm as well. And in the cyber world, there's such a little, a much smaller risk of being discovered So they get bold and they anticipate and develop and plan for bigger crimes with bigger reward, with very little risk.
Social media.
Yeah.
This can hurt you. It's not necessarily just about staying in touch with your friends.
Sure.
Put a little bit too much out there, and then what happens?
Well, in the intelligence community, they used to have, you know, back in the Cold War, you'd have spy games. They'd have pretexting, and there'd be human intelligence, and they'd go to school at, you know, the farm, and they'd learn the concepts of elicitation and cool techniques that the Soviets were awesome at called honey traps. And this is just a way to get people talking, so that they could glean information that could later be used. And these people were called collectors. They called it tradecraft. And it's really cool if you ever dig into the history of this type of stuff. We talk about these types of elements in The Harbinger and we have some tongue-in-cheek articles about the Cold War and tradecraft and how it's evolved over the years. Well, now in cyberspace, tradecraft is starting to atrophy, because you don't need to elicit information from anybody because everybody pushes everything out there for you. They're force feeding all of their private information to you, and you're practically gagging on it. You've got their faces, their family, what bands they listen to, what concerts they went to, what tickets they have, where they're going to be, you know,
every
who they hung
friend
out.
That they might go to seek help or shelter in a problem.
Absolutely. So if I wanted to come up to you one day and I say, hey, how you doing? You know, I got these cool Zappa tickets. You know, it's got Dweezil, you know, Zappa doing Zappa. And, you know, Terry Bozzio's on drums. And, you know, it's going to be the real deal. You know, you really need to go. Now, you who sit in the chair that you sit in and you listen to the things that you listen to. But if I come up to you and I say that to you with that inflection and I got tickets I can't go to and you got front row center to Dweezil, all your shields and all of your defense mechanisms and all your tradecraft just went right out the window because I hit you emotionally where you wanted to be hit at a time when you wanted to be hit there. And now you're in my car because we're going to go see the Zappa concert. And we got backstage passes. Well, guess what? I photoshopped them because 1962 is over, by the way. But you're in my car, and I got you there using just emotion. And what did I use? The information you pushed out onto your social media. So you did it all. You jumped in the pool. So we're
sticking it to ourselves, as the old Sprint commercial went.
Exactly, and you're a guy as old as me that knows a thing or two about a thing or two. What about our kids? Do they know what the world is like? Do they know to look both ways before crossing the street? Do they know the cyber equivalent of don't talk to strangers? Well, it's really bad out there, and unfortunately, a lot of the parents don't understand how the internet works. If you go to their house, you'll see that they got a VCR sitting there in their entertainment center, and the clock is blinking 12 o'clock because they haven't figured out how to set the freaking timer on the thing.
Sure.
You think they're going to be able to educate their kids on how to protect themselves from a cyber predatory stalker?
No, they couldn't program the VCR before they became obsolete.
You've nailed it. So again, you can't improve something that's not measured. And unfortunately, there's a huge gap in between the kids today that were born in the mobile 4G world and their parents who can do very little with their smartphone other than take some pictures and make a call. And they're just now getting onto the cutting edge of text message. They don't know what tweeting is. They don't know what Foursquare is. They don't know what geotagging is. They don't know how to turn their location services off on their phone so that people can't exploit their social media account and find out exactly where they are in any given time and know that they're not home so they can come by John's house and grab his plasma screen. You know, we push that information out there unconsciously. And some of that is done for us by our social media hosting companies and by our mobile service providers. And we don't know it.
Gotcha. I'll tell you what, when we come back, I would like for you to enlighten us as to what happens when these children and teenagers are pushed into the slave trade. Do they retire gracefully and open a wine bar somewhere, or what happens to them when their usefulness has been served? We'll be back with Brad Barker on Coast to Coast AM.